Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 25, Verse 25. Please repeat.
Anantu Sattvika Vaso Gramo Rajasa Uchyate Tamasam Dyuta Sadhanam Manniketam Tu Nirgunam.
Please repeat. Vanam, the forest. Veras, sorry. Tu, Veras. Sattvikaha, in the mode of goodness. Vasaha, residence. Gramaha, the village neighborhood. Rajasaha, in the mode of passion. Uchade, is said. Tamasam, in the mode of ignorance. Dyuta Sadhanam, the gambling house. Mat Niketam, my residence. Tu, but. Nirgunam, transcendental. Translation and purport by Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada ki jai. Please repeat. Residence in the forest is in the mode of goodness. Residence in a town is in the mode of passion. Residence in a gambling house displays the quality of ignorance. And residence in a place where I reside is transcendental. Many creatures in the forest, such as the trees, wild boars and insects, are actually in the modes of passion and ignorance. But residence in the forest is designated as being in the mode of goodness, because there one may live solitary life free from sinful activities, material opulence, and passionate ambition. Throughout the history of India, many millions of persons from all walks of life adopted the orders of Vanaprastha, Sannyasa, and have gone to sacred forests to practice austerity and perfect their self-realization. Even in America and other Western countries, persons such as Thoreau achieved fame by retiring to the forest to reduce the scope and opulence of material involvement. The word grama here indicates residence in the village of one's family. Family life is certainly full of false pride, false hopes, false affection, lamentation, illusion. Since the family connection is squarely resting on the bodily concept of life, the very opposite of self-realization. The word Dyuta Sadhanam, gambling house, refers to pool halls, race tracks, poker clubs, bars, and other sinful places that maintain an abysmal level of consciousness in the mode of ignorance. Manniketam refers to the Lord's own abode in the spiritual world, as well as the Lord's temples within this world, wherein the daily form of the Lord is appropriately worshipped. One who lives in the temple of Lord Krishna, following the rules and regulations of temple life, is understood to be residing on the transcendental platform. In these verses, the Lord clearly explains that all material phenomena may be divided into three divisions according to the modes of nature, and that ultimately there is the fourth or transcendental division, which is Krishna consciousness, which elevates all aspects of human culture to the liberated platform. Om Jnanatamarum Dasinyananja Shalaki Chakshurumaritamina Tasma Shri Guru Namanamomus Vilayas Tamsthar Bhukli Srimad Jepa Swamini Vilani Namachari Padaya Nikhlai Kripa Padaya Nikhlai Kripa Padaya Nikhlai Momaspadaya Sampastaya Bhuvali Srimadhi Bhakti Vidanda Swamini Vinamini Namaste Sarasvati Devi Gauravani Pachali Nirvishesha Sunyodhi Pasatta Destani Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Grada Sari Gaur Vatanda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram Hare Ram 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 Hare 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 Krishna. Nobody is saying Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. We are the Hare Krishna movement. Every opportunity you get to say Hare Krishna is the same. I give you a golden opportunity and just missed it. Haribol. Anyway, now this particular chapter is entitled The Three Modes and Beyond. Now, some of you may be new today, and of course most of you are regulars, so you know about the three modes of nature. You've heard about it so many times, and you know everything about it. But anyway, since this chapter is dedicated to the three modes of nature, I would like to say something about it. Now, as you know, this particular portion of the Bhagavatam is called Uddhava Gita, because Krishna is preaching to Krishna is preaching to Uddhava. Just like in the battlefield, Krishna preached to Arjuna the Bhagavad Gita. So, the Uddhava Gita is only next to the Bhagavad Gita. There are so many Gitas I've said before, but nothing is compared to the Bhagavad Gita. And the only thing that comes very close to the Bhagavad Gita is the Uddhava Gita, the last instruction of Lord Krishna to Uddhava. Now, there are 24 chapters, if I'm not mistaken, in the Uddhava Gita. One chapter is dedicated to the three modes of material nature. Similarly, in the Bhagavad Gita, there are 18 chapters, and there is one chapter just devoted to these three modes of nature. But just as in the Bhagavad Gita, from the beginning, the three modes of nature is being explained throughout by the Lord. It is chapter 1, chapter 2, chapter 3, you can see all that. But in the 14th chapter, Gunatraya Vibhaga Yoga, 14th chapter, there is an in-depth discussion about the three modes of nature. Similarly, in the Uddhava Gita too, Krishna talks about the modes of nature in so many places, but most intently in this particular chapter. So, what we have to understand is the three modes permeate all aspects of our life. In everything, the way we dress, the way we eat, the way we sleep, in everything. Everything that we do, the modes of nature play a part. Depending on the mode of nature, we do things accordingly. And the other thing that we have to know is, where is this happening? Where is this mode of nature happening? Is it happening where exactly? Body, outside, where? It's actually happening, because Lord Krishna himself explains, it's all happening, it's arising from the mind. So, we will discuss further later on how the modes act and how the mind reacts and how we can go about with this. Now, we have to understand the modes of nature also there in animal life. But they cannot do anything about it. The animals just react. Like children, they just react. You know, they can't understand what they're doing, whatever. But our understanding is, though there is the three modes are acting on us, but by carefully understanding these things that is acting on us, and by knowledge, spiritual knowledge, not any knowledge, and then by discrimination. The Sanskrit word is jnana and viveka. You get this knowledge and then you discriminate properly. And what happens? You can get on top of things. That means you can actually beat the three modes of nature. That's the memo. We will go into that later on. I'll give you examples. What we have to understand is, we all know that there are three gunas. Everybody knows the mode of goodness, mode of passion, mode of ignorance, known as sattvas, rajas and tamas. But if you go to New Zealand, they'll talk about the fourth guna. This is not an insult. They're very proud of the kivigun. They call it the kivigun. Prabhu, this is New Zealand, Prabhu. We have got one more gun here, kivigun. And they're very proud about it. But I don't know how to define the kivigun, because it's very, very unpredictable. Now, I would just leave that, because everything is being recorded. I won't say more than that. But just for your information, there is something called kivigun. Okay. Now, where do the gunas come from? Gunas come from the material nature. So, gunas are eternal. So somebody may, what? Gunas are eternal. Because material nature is internal. So somebody might say, why? Why material nature? You know, the Mayavadi is saying this is all illusion, it's all false. As long as Krishna is there, the material nature will also be there. Krishna is eternal. Krishna is eternal. There is no doubt. None of you are going to argue with me on that. So Krishna is eternal, and so material nature is also eternal. But it doesn't bring out the material nature. It doesn't manifest it. It only manifests it for a while and takes it back. I'll give you a simple example. When I was young, I used to see this. The magician, I mean all of you know this. The magician will come with a bag of tricks, as you call it. He bundles everything. And then there is a festival in town. This magician is already there. He goes around telling, I'm already here. And then he opens out his bag of tricks. He's got everything there. It's a small bag, but he's got sticks and ropes and, you know, like a tent. And his trick was, he'll put three poles and he'll put a tent. He'll be chained to one post. And after 10 minutes, somebody will go and remove the tent. And then he'll be on the other pole. That was his trick. But what I'm trying to say is, just as the magician brings his bag of tricks, unfolds it, and displays some pastime, and then when the festival is over, packs it back, puts it into this bag, and goes to another town, another festival. Similarly, the Lord, the material nature is manifested temporarily for some reason, and then He unfolds it and takes it for another place. But material nature is eternal, temporary manifestation. Unlike what Mayavadi says, it is not false. It is real, but temporary. Now, Krishna has got the spiritual energy. He lives in the spiritual world. He's got the spiritual energy. Just as the spiritual energy has got three kinds, spiritual potency or energy has got three kinds of potencies. We all know the pleasure potency, which is called Hiladri. That is to give pleasure to Him. Then there is the Santini potency, which is eternal, eternity. And then thirdly, He's got the Samvit potency, which is knowledge. Just like Krishna's spiritual energy has got three components, the same material energy, which is also from Krishna, has also got three components, which is Sattvas, Rajas and Tamas. Now, these gunas affect everything and anything actually. Gunas affect animals too. In the there are many stories. We have seen how the animals generally also behave according to the gunas. For instance, a cow. The cow in India is, people laugh at it. Oh, the holy cow and, you know, this and that. The sacred cow. But actually the cow is such a wonderful animal. If you look at it, minus Krishna and all that, just look at it as an animal. It has, in fact, if you go to the villages, it's not the bulls that plow the land, the cows that plow the land. I know in my village, that's what happens. What they do, whatever rubbish, whatever leftover stuff, you know, you cook rice, you know, the rice water, you know, you cut vegetables, and whatever, you know, leftovers and useless food and spoiled, everything is done to the cow. And the cow is happily munching the whole day. Plus the cow is taken to the fields to work, and then it gives cow dung, which is useful. And most importantly, most of the world over, everybody loves cow's milk. So the animal thinks of only giving, it lives a very selfless life and is only considering of doing good things to others. So it's very painful when such a beautiful creation and people just cut and eat it up. And you said, why do you do it? You know, he's giving milk. Somebody who gives you milk, you must consider as your mother. So he said, no, it's all right. It's mother, so what? I'll still eat my mother. That's what he'll say. So, the animals too, typically like reptiles, like snakes and all, they're definitely in the mode of ignorance. You know, because they just sleep the whole day. A snake will sleep for weeks and weeks and weeks. It doesn't do anything to anybody. Of course, you go and disturb it, it'll bite you. But otherwise, you wait. And then it takes a rat or something, and then it goes on for a week without any food. And the other animals like the lions and tigers and all, they are supposed to be animals in the modes of passion. Now even matter is also supposed to be influenced by the modes of nature. Mountains, the people describe about mountains in a mode of goodness, they got a lot of beautiful trees, shade, fruits, rivers and all that going in there. Then that kind of a mountain is considered a mountain who's in the mode of goodness. And mountains with a lot of, you know, shrubs and thorns and things like that, considered passion, and the mountains which are barren, they're considered ignorant. But of course, a mountain like Govardhan is beyond everything, because if you go even do a little bit of parikram in Govardhan, then you can go back home. Now, interestingly, there was this an article about Switzerland. There are three mountains in Switzerland. Some of these things are a bit speculative, so I didn't bother to get the names. But you can, if you want to know about it, you can go three gunas, whatever, Switzerland mountains or whatever, you will get it. There are three mountains and described. One is described as in the mode of goodness, and it gives all the reasons why in the mode of goodness. And actually, this is speculative, but they say that how the form of Vishnu is there. And then the other one is Brahma. The other mountain is considered, mode of passion, and then Brahma's image is there, they say. And the third one is mode of ignorance, and they say the half moon, the Chandrasekhara. Lord Shiva is known as Chandrasekhara, means one who adorns the moon, the half moon. So the shape of the half moon is also there. And accordingly, the three mountains behave differently. So even somebody has commented about that. But generally, what we understand from our Shastras, a cow in the next birth, when he becomes a human, they say he is in the mode of goodness because of all that sattvic nature in the previous birth. In fact, they even say that if you are a cow in the past birth, in the next birth you are a Brahmana. And a lion, in the next birth, becomes a very passionate person. And a monkey, of course, that person, the human, is predominated, or is the dominant nature will be tamas. Now, so animals too are affected by these modes of nature, and there are many stories about it. There was about 2 years ago, a group of divers, they had gone, Australians, these Aussies, Aussie blokes, who went to New Zealand, and they had this diving expedition. So they went deep down and they were taking pictures, and like Prabhu's doing, they're doing underwater, all kinds of shots. Suddenly there were five dolphins, and the five dolphins were circling these divers. And, dolphins are in the mode of goodness, so they're very, very friendly and very sensitive. They say they can even cry. Anyway, the dolphins were circling these divers, and they were wondering why. Now, of course, they were happy, to see dolphins, but it's a funny kind of a behavioral pattern going around. And for a while, they were wondering why. And then they understood why the dolphins were circling them, because a great white shark was coming towards them. The dolphins sensed that the humans were in trouble, and to protect the humans, they formed like a fort and going around these people so that the shark can't come and affect them. Because the shark, as you know, is in the mode of passion. That's it. If there is a chance, then it's going to attack. But somehow or other, dolphins protected them. And then, of course, they were all with their cameras. So they went on shooting everything. The dolphins, the shark, they went on shooting one after another. And then they started moving towards the shore, and the dolphins followed them and they protected them. They kept going towards the shore, and the dolphins kept on going. And finally, when they said shore, and then of course the dolphins went on its way, and the shark was disappointed, and they were happy. But these divers, they never spoke about this incident for 2 months. Only after 2 months, Then they reveal this information to the press. Now one may wonder why. Why? It is such a fantastic thing. Why can't they just came back? They should call the press and tell them. Because the divers were also in the board of goodness. They were scammed. If they tell this story, some rednecks will come and say, get the helicopter, get the submarine, go after the shark, kill the shark. They were so scared that the shark may be in danger. So they just hid the whole story, and 2 months later, and then they revealed the story. This is a real story. Many, many years ago when I was running the farm in Malaysia, thanks to Jananda Goswami, anyway, what happened is, we had this incident that I saw myself, we had this big, the mother cow, and there was a hen, a fowl, which was some or other flying. We had a trough where you keep water, and this thing came and fell onto the water, and the thing was making a lot of noise, struggling to get out of the trough, because it was water, and you know. So this mother cow was looking like that for a while, and then it actually went and took a bite, and I thought cows are vegetarian. And I thought, what's happening, you know, maybe this ISKCON cow is all getting spoiled now. So, this cow took a bite, very gentle bite, of course. Oh, the hand was screaming away. It just took it like that in the thing and just flipped across like that. Oh, just flew it away, you know. And so that's a fantastic thing. So you find that these gunas are not only affecting humans, they affect everything. They affect matter too, like I said, and also animals very much. So generally where the gunas of we study from the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, where Mahaprabhu says about the guna avatars, where the Lord expands, when he expands as the guna avatars, as Vishnu, as the presiding deity of Sattvic or Sattvas, and Brahma as the control of Rajas, and Lord Shiva as the control of Tamas. Now what we should understand is, though there has been bewilderment by Lord Shiva or Lord Brahma in the roles as controllers with the thing, but you must not misinterpret. Sometimes people say that Lord Shiva is tamasic. That is wrong. Or Lord Brahma is rajasic. That is also wrong. They are the controllers. They are not tamasic. They are not rajasic. But certain incidents take place for the Lord's leela. So, they are controllers. We know that Vaishnavanam yada sambhu. If Vaishnavas, of all the Vaishnavas, the greatest is Shambhu, Lord Shiva. If Lord Shiva is the greater Vaishnava, then how can he be tamasic? It is contradictory. So we have to understand that. But the thing is, we all have an accrued nature. We have accrued this nature. And because of this accrued nature, we tend to act accordingly. But by proper knowledge, in the last chapter we read about that, absolute knowledge in the mode of goodness and mode of passion and all that. So by getting this proper knowledge, by getting transcendental knowledge about the Supreme, and then by applying your, discrimination. You have to use your intelligence and you have to discriminate properly, and then you'll be able to understand. If you read the Gita, and to understand even Krishna's existence, the modes of material nature will help you. If you see, oh, these people are you can actually see, you read it, and then you see people living in the mode of ignorance, people living in the mode of passion, and people living in the mode of goodness, and that gives you an impetus. You only get convinced about Krishna's existence and Krishna's material nature. And why these things are happening. So in today's verse, the Lord is talking about residence in the forest, in the mode of goodness, residence in a town, the mode of passion, residence in a gambling house, displaying the quality of ignorance. And says residence in the place where I reside is transcendental. So Vrindavan, Mathura, these are places where the Lord is residing, so they are definitely transcendental. Now we have four ashrams. We have got Brahmacharya, there is Grahastha, there is Vanaprastha, and there are Sannyas. Now you'll find that of the four ashrams, three of them, except Grahastha, there is Brahmacharya, Vanaprastha, and Sannyas. All these three orders of life, you actually live in the forest. Only the Grahastha to maintain his family and make some money, whatever, then he is supposed to go to the town. So that means, in the Vedic system, living in the forest was the most apt or proper thing to do. And when you talk about the holy places where he resides, and then Prabhupada here explains too, it's not only Mayapur or Vrindavan, every Hare Krishna temple is also a place where the Lord resides, because we do everything that is happening in the spiritual world here, there is worship going on, offering going on, everything that is done for the Lord so that we can also participate in the same way. But by applying this knowledge and discriminating, we will understand our real nature. Now we are acting by our crude nature, and then by applying this knowledge, then we will understand our real nature. And the real nature is to serve Krishna. Krishnera Nityadas. Jivera Sarupahai, Krishnera Nityadas. The Jiva's constitutional position is to act as a servant of Krishna. So, these things will all make us understand why we're doing this and why things. So, just like I said, in the Bhagavad Gita, there is a whole chapter, Gunatraya Vibhaga Yoga, chapter 14, if I'm not mistaken. He says, Krishna also says, why we should do that? Why we should follow all that? Now, firstly, somebody might ask, why this material nature at all? Why this material world? Why not just do away with it and then the problem is solved, isn't it? Why, you know, here we come here, we get trapped in the modes and then we have to do all this? That's because originally we wanted this. So, Krishna is making the arrangements very nicely. And is giving all this provision to, if you want to come to the material world, you want to have this independence of enjoying and being served. So you come to the material world, so if you come to the material world, then you must have a... How do you go to the material world? Supposing you want to go to a nightclub, then you have to wear a tuxedo, and you know, you must wear proper clothes and proper shoes. And you must have your girlfriend too, otherwise the guy says, hey, where's your girl? No girl, no entry. So, like that, they have different rules, different things at different places. You want to go to a swimming pool? You can't simply jump into the swimming pool with all this. They'll show you out. You stretch your garb. You must have your swimsuit and this and that. And then you can do that. Similarly, you come to the material world. So you can't, if you know, you have to forget this understanding that you are part and parcel of Krishna. You have to forget the understanding that you are servant of Krishna. You have to think that I am the Lord of what I see. You have to think like that. So Krishna gives you this beautiful material body, so-called beautiful material body, which we all admire in the morning in front of the mirror and go this way and that way and, you know, we do all that. So this material body plus this material, all this is given to us so that we can forget our identity, the real identity, forget our real nature, and then get attached to that accrued nature. Prabhupada explains many a time how the soul is pure, but due to the contamination of material nature, for time immemorial, he says. Not last life, close life. Time immemorial. And he compares this to a raindrop. A raindrop which is very clear, clean. If you catch a raindrop, it is so beautiful, you can drink it straight away. Maybe not in Melbourne or Calcutta, but some places I'm sure it's quite clean. But the point is, when the raindrop falls onto this earth, and then it gets contaminated, and then it becomes muddy and cloudy and dirty, so it becomes, you know, a very thing. Similarly, we are also same thing. We are pure by nature, but because of this contamination of material nature, so we contaminate sin. Then the Lord, being merciful, also comes to the material world and says, see, you're trying to enjoy on your own. Are you happy? You're not happy because this is not your real position. And he leaves the scriptures for us. He leaves acharyas for us. And then he himself comes down and says, look, just follow me. You know, you can go back. So he gives us all this information. And all we have to do is, now that we have experienced material life, and we are experiencing material life, we should be able to understand the stupidity behind it. And by adopting my understanding, by doing this, practicing this, and then slowly but surely you will go back home, back to Godhead. In the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 14, Krishna says that. He says, Udunga chanti sattvastha, madhyesi chanti rajasaha, jaganya guna vrittistha, adoga chanti tamasaha. He says, which means, those who are in the mode of goodness practicing, they go upwards to the heavenly planets. Those who are in the mode of passion, they live in the earthly planets. And those who live in the mode of ignorance, they go to the hellish planets. So he warns us. So then everybody will be scared, you know, then, you know, such a, like, you know, he becomes like a tyrant telling you, be careful, it's like, you know, reading the Quran, you know, you don't do this, I'll kill you, you know. So we get a bit terrified by Krishna warning us like that. Then he also says, this one he says earlier, Krishna shows that one who understands material nature, who understands the living entities, and who understands the interaction of the three modes of nature, will surely get liberation, he says. That is in the 13th chapter. He gives two promises. He says, you will get liberation, he says. Just to know that, you know, now you have learned, you know, the material nature, living entities, we all are stuck. And then the interaction of the three modes, he said, you will get liberated. And then he says, and then he adds on, gives you another bonus, you will never get birth again. So, there is hope. There is hope. So, if all of you have listened up to now very carefully, and according to Krishna's promise, all of you are going back. I don't know about myself, I don't know whether I am talking properly. But he says, very clearly Krishna says, that you do, if you understand these three things, you're going back home. So that's a lot of hope for us. Now, as I said in the beginning itself, the modes of nature, they are happening where it's a state of the mind. Now, this is a very important subject, the mind. If you do not, I know you're not dealing with such people, I deal with a lot of people. Now, mind is a very, very important subject. It's an important subject to all of us too. Most importantly, us. We have to understand firstly that the master psychologist is Krishna. He has talked about the working of the mind and all that much better than any stupid psychologist in the world. Now this is on record. I hope the psychologists don't come after me. The first thing is, they don't even know where the mind is. They'll all talk about the mind being in the brain, in the head and all that. That's not what Krishna is saying. Now let me give you some examples, then you'll probably understand. This mind science, Krishna is talking about it all the time, manmana bhava, madbhakto, madhyadi, mam namaskuru. The whole chapter of the whole, he gives a whole chapter on the science of the mind. That's chapter 6, Jnana Yoga. If you read, he's talking again and again and again about the mind, how it works and what you're supposed to do. How's your mind your friend? How's your enemy? No, people outside without this knowledge can afford to become confused. Now, students of the Bhagavad Gita, we shouldn't be confused. We shouldn't have mental problems. We shouldn't have this confusion at all. It becomes silly. You read Bhagavad Gita and then you have problems. You have to understand. You have to learn it. You have to practice it. The whole thing is, there is this, of course, I can speak about the mind for the rest of the day. We can't do that. But I'm going to just excite you with a few information.
So that each time when we discuss and the time appropriate time comes, we can even discuss more about the mind. Now, the mind's business is duality. You have to understand. That's the job of the mind. The mind says, I like this, I don't like this. I like strawberry, I hate raspberry. I like blue, I hate white. This is the work of the mind. The first thing you should do is, you should kick the mind. That's the business of the mind. You have to go on top of the mind. You have to understand. Krishna says, duality. That's the work of the mind. The senses experience, we are tasting. We're doing so many things. We are smelling, tasting, whatever. We're doing so many things. The mind registers the experience. And intelligence discriminates. So, the only thing is, the business of the mind is to say like, oh, this is good. But the mind changes. Keeps changing. But really, I'll tell you one thing. When it's summer, let's say, oh, this heat. I can't stand the heat. You know, you just come from India yesterday, and then you say, I can't stand the heat. I mean, as if you're from Himalayas or something like that. No. And then, what happens when summer goes and winter comes in? And the heat I can somehow tolerate. This cold, I hate this cold. When it rains, people, I hate this rain. This hating and liking is a business of the mind, and you should go on top of it and say, just shut up. You must tell your mind, just shut up, will you? I've got business to do. You have to go on top of that. This practice comes easy in the Eastern tradition because somehow or other we have this understanding. For instance, the Western thing, if you tell the child, okay, go and get me a glass of water, first thing you will say, no. You know, no, I'm thirsty, can you please bring me a water? Why? That's all. Because the mind says, why should you go and get it? He wants water, let him go. But you want to go. That's his business. So they train like that. So they think that there's a good training. But in the East, they think, no, he's no. Big man tells you, you go run and do it. So of course you tell an Indian boy, say, yes, he'll run all over the world to bring his life. And somebody will think, this is so stupid. Look at him, so stupid. But that is a training for the mind. And if you can't even do that, how are you going to do it? The same boy grows up 12 years, 13 years, and then he says, marijuana I'm picking, but I'm not still happy. Can you give me something more? See, it's already the mind is drifting and drifting and drifting. You just let go. And then 30 years he'll come and say, all finished, heroin, everything is gone. I want to try meditation. Meditate on what? It's all gone. It's finished. You have let it go. And this is all happening in institutions, so-called institutions of modern thing, schools. And of course, Indian parents are fighting for this school and that school, and education is better than them. Yeah, but they also learn all these things. We have become, unless you inject, you give them the immunization of Bhagavad Gita, sending them to all these schools, this is true. What Prabhupada says, they're all slaughterhouses. They learn all the wrong things. And it's wasted. Because after, even if he's qualified with the highest kind of thing, and then he'll only, the modes of nature will work on him. So he'll be a gynecologist. How will he be making? He'll be performing abortions and making money. And he'll be very happy. I got so much of money. It doesn't click on him that I'm doing the wrong thing. So these are things that we have to understand. So I drifted from one to another. Now back to the mind science. Yeah, we are talking about mind science. So the mind, the duality, and Krishna tells about the mind and the workings and all that. So we all are mental, isn't it? Hare Krishna, we are mental. But that's okay. I mean, we have to be a bit mental to become Hare Krishna. But after coming here, we shouldn't be carried away by so many things. We have to be very careful how the mind operates and how we have to think. But the mind, in the Eastern tradition as well as the Western tradition, they talk about the conscious mind, the subconscious mind, and the superconscious mind. Conscious mind, you know, you're listening, you're saying, I'm seeing you, everything's happening. Subconscious is, it's happening, this is not within your control. Your heart is beating, you're breathing, and you're not controlling it. Somehow or other, there's something happening. But the subconscious mind is also very powerful. You see big billboards. Sometimes big things. Have a Coke. These days, there's a lot of, I shouldn't be saying in a Bhagavad class, but have this.
If you're not having enough, ring this number. Because even if you're driving, and if you're not looking at it, just one glance like that, that's enough to go into your subconscious mind and create an impression upon you. And you'll pick up. Then the minute you stop the car, you say, can I have a Coke? Because that message has gone into your head. You would have seen, you'll have a, something like that. This is all, this has been proven, you know, like there was an experiment where they have a film, they just, you know, films have got a lot of, what do you call that? You know, like slides, whatever. Frames, that's the word. So the frames are moving so fast so that one frame is like that. So when it moves faster, so you can see that person is moving and all that. They just put one frame, they just took one frame and said, have a Coke. And they showed to an audience. And as soon as the thing was over and they asked, what do you like to have? Everybody said Coke. Though they never saw have a Coke in the thing. Because it's like a movie. Right? It was just a tick maybe. But that was enough. The subconscious mind picked up that message. So the mind is a very, very, very powerful organ. It's very, very powerful. If you handle it properly, then it can do a lot of things for you. Now in the superconscious state, now people, many of you, of course, you all know Michael Jackson. Next to Michael Jackson on his right, there's this guy called Uri Geller. This guy, he looks at a spoon, he looks at it, and he looks at it, and he bends the spoon. That means, this is called telekinetics. By looking at it, he has got this superconscious power. And he discovered this trait accidentally. He was looking at a clock that never ran for so many years. And he was looking at it for a while and suddenly the clock started moving. And of course, you know, he freaked out. So what's happening? Then he realized that he had this talent. And then much later he used to go around the world. And he's, because his car, you can see all the celebrities of the world, you know, like Elvis Presley and John Lennon and Harrison and all these people. He goes to their houses, he bends a spoon and then sticks them into his car. So his car has got all these spoons from all the celebrities. And you can Google, you know, moon spoon bending parties. They're even going on spoon. But the point is telekinesis. See, what happens is the mind becomes so powerful that even matter can be moved. And there are psychics and clairvoyants. For instance, in America, there is a murder committed and the police just can't do anything. There are murders committed, say, in Michigan. This lady's clairvoyant is from, say, Philadelphia. And she's flown over. And the lady comes and says, can I sell us? And she says, oh, there's a car, red car. I can see a red car. Man is getting out and, you know, he's got a felt hat. He's got a overcoat and brown overcoat with this. So she goes on and then, yeah, he opens the door and this is it. Yeah, yeah, the killing was, the lady was screaming and he killed her here. And so she can't really picture the face, but she can say a lot of things. And the police are taking all these clues. And with these clues, they've caught many murderers or many criminals, whatever. So, how did this special thing? In the East European countries, like Russia and Poland and, you know, these kind of places, there's a lot of study. This is called parapsychology. There is a lot of study in this kind of science. Whereas there's not so much in, you know, the Western countries. So, This is the mind we have to know. That's why Krishna says, you know, abandon all varieties of religion and surrender to me and keep your mind on me and all that. Because unless we do that, the mind will always be fixed on something else. Politicians on power, businessmen on money, others on women, sex, gambling, whatever, it goes on. So the mind's nature is to get attached to something and we have to somehow or other draw it out and put out. So sometimes this psychic nature is even affecting animals. I mean, I don't know how this is true, but during the World Cup, there was this octopus in Germany. They put a, you know, there was a tank, and they'll put two flags of the country, the football game, and they'll put some mussel, they'll put this octopus, and the octopus will go and goes into that particular tank, the fiction. So there is a German tank and a Spanish tank, say, and the octopus goes straight. So the fight, the game is between Spain and Germany, so it goes straight into the, you know, whichever. Then it was, they call it the psychic octopus. Paul, the psychic octopus. So it was right all the time. And the last one between Germany, and because the German, it was in Germany, the octopus, it chose Spain. The whole of Germany was very angry. The fellows were all angry. Bring it to my, I want to put it on my frying pan. They wanted to eat it out. So, but that is a psychic octopus. So, what I'm trying to say is that the mind or the mind science is a very important thing. And so the mind and behavior, this is what I wanted to connect, the mind and the modes of nature. Just like Patanjali Yogi says in the Yoga Sutras, that if you want to control the senses, you have to control the mind. For mind control, you need sense control. That's what we do. For mind control, we do japa. Sense control, we have all of our senses are engaged in the service of Krishna and we take prasadam. So we do sense control and mind control simultaneously. So for sense control we need mind control and for mind control we need sense control. So that's what happens. Similarly, when you want to control the modes of nature, it's the same thing. You control the mind, at the same time you must also control the nature. 4 o'clock in the morning, raining heavily, it's so cold, so nice to sleep. Should I get up or should I not get up? The mind will say, go to sleep, don't be a fool. And then he must say, no, I'm getting up. Of course, not everybody can do that, but it's... That is for Saturday. So like that, I mean, you know these kind of examples. So, you can, by controlling the mind and controlling the nature, you will have a proper control of both. But Krishna also says, see, suppose somebody is in... The best part of the whole thing is, supposing you have got tamas as your predominant nature, by practicing sattva, you can overcome. You know, you can slowly but surely get out of tamas to rajas, get out of rajas to goodness. But goodness, tamas, rajas, they are all still conditioning. Don't think that you have come to goodness, it is already, you have achieved the goal. It is not. Just because you are wearing tilak, you are wearing this kind of dress, you carry jabamala and you're wearing garlands, doesn't mean you've already crossed. No. You still may be trapped. But it says, of course, very difficult, but you have to go beyond the modes. Beyond the modes, which is beyond the mode of goodness, that is called the Suddha Sattva platform. Pure goodness. Now, when you have reached the Suddha Sattva platform, then Krishna will take birth in your house. That's what happened. For Vasudeva, he was in the Suddha Sattva platform, and so, Lord Krishna took birth in his house. Now, so we have to have some understanding about the modes of nature, action, thing and all that. Now, as I said, this is Uddhava Gita, and we are talking about Uddhava. This instruction is going to Uddhava. Now, interestingly, we all know that Uddhava is a very, very learned person. He's a very, very close friend of Krishna. He was a cousin. He was the cousin of... In India, they say cousin brother, because the cousin can be a brother or he can be a marriable cousin. I don't want to go there, but you know what I mean. So, he was a cousin brother. That means they call each other brothers. And they were more or less of the same age. Born in Mathura. And Krishna, of course, went away. He was taken away. But Uddhava was born in Mathura. From small, you are sent. You go to Vrindavan and be a playmate. From small, Uddhava is a playmate for Krishna. And they grew up. So, that is an interesting. So, such a learned Uddhava. Uddhava has been with Krishna for so many things, so many places, and done so many things together. Such a learned Uddhava, he himself was, was trapped in this, we can say, in the modes of nature, and he got into difficulty. It's a very interesting story. I'm sure most of you would not have heard it. Anyway, this is not only the story is very difficult to say, because it is not usually a story, it's just a straightforward story. But this story, Krishna is actually weaving the philosophy through the story. And I can't really do a good job. So I will tell you finally where to get this story so you can go and read it. It's a masterpiece, especially for brahmacharis. It's a real masterpiece. Because when Krishna is preaching to Uddhava, and Uddhava is having this problem that most of us, any one of us can have. And the way the Lord himself, I said earlier, the master psychologist, he himself handled it. It's so beautiful. It's unbelievable. This thing is found in a book called Krishnavatara, based on Mahabharata. It's overlapping Mahabharata. This thing happened. And they were both about 21 years of age. Krishna was a young man and Uddhava was also a young man. And the book was translated by K.K. Munshi. And it's a very, he's done a fantastic job. I mean, normally Mayavadis write all kinds of things. But this is perfect. He was, not mistaken, Aurobindo's, what do you call, disciple. Okay, back to the story. The story goes like that. Now, you all know about the false Vasudeva, who said that I am the real Vasudeva. What is this fellow, you know? Who is this Krishna? He's a cowherd. He's a, you know, he's not even fit to be a Vaisya. He's a Sudra. You know, black fellow looking after cows. And what the hell is he claiming to be, you know, the supreme and carrying the Sangha Chakra and all that? They all rightfully mine. So this false Vasudeva was claiming, give it back to me. Give that Sangha. Why are you holding it? You give it back to me. I'm the real Vasudeva. And he was going on challenging Krishna for a long time. And so, Uddhava was sent as a messenger. Krishna says, okay, you go and have a talk to him first before I finish him. If he changes his life, then of course, you ask for forgiveness, let him go. Otherwise, then there's no other way, I have to finish him. See, that's why people can get away. They can say, he is God, Sai Baba is God, my grandmother is God. You can say anything and get away. But during Krishna's time, you can't get away. The chakra will come after you. India today, everybody will say God, God, God. Everybody is God today. Because there's no chakra today. That time, the chakra was there. Everybody is God in India. But you tell Krishna is God, how is that? Why they'll jump? Anybody you say God, they'll say. But you say Krishna is God, why they'll jump? Why? Oh, this, that and the other. Upanishad said that, Veda said this. You'll see so many arguments. So anyway, if everybody is God, then Krishna is also God. What's your problem? Everybody is God. You say that, then Krishna is God. No, everybody is God. Krishna is not God. Why? Why Krishna is not God? Anyway, the story goes, so what happens is, sense was Uddhava to go in on this mission. Now, Uddhava goes to this place, see this false Vasudeva, and this place is called as Karavirapura. That's a city where this false imposed living. Now, interestingly, what happens is, he's got a niece who's very beautiful. Just unimaginably beautiful. And when Uddhava lands there, and he sees this girl, and he is so much in love with her. That's it. He's smitten by love, and he's so much in love with her. What happens earlier is, there is another person in Sandipani Muni Shastram, they were all there. There is one person called Shvetaketu. He was the senior most disciple of Sandipani Muni. Now, this same person, Shvetaketu, at one time, the niece's name is Shaibya. You can do this reference. So the niece, she had by chance come to the ashram somewhere nearby, and this Shvetaketu had seen this girl. And Shvetaketu goes flat, that's it. You know, he thought, oh, this is the girl of my life. And he left his ashram and went and joined Vasudev, that false Vasudev, in this place, what you call Karavirapura. Now, he was hoping that he will get this girl. But the girl is very, very attached to the uncle. So he realized that, you know, only if the uncle gives permission, he can marry. So he became a sidekick for the king, that is, the false Vasudev, the imposter. So hoping that one day he will. So it is all there in the air. But Vasudeva was not giving permission yet. At this time, Uddhava comes in and he sees his girl, he is so much in love with her, he is so beautiful and all that. So anyway, the mission fails, it's a long story, can't go on. So he says that Lord Krishna comes there and chops off his head. That's it, Vasudeva's head is gone. And who is a witness to the whole thing? Shaivi is a witness. She says, uncle being just slaughtered away like that. And since she loves her uncle so much, she was very angry. She was not only angry with Krishna, which is natural, she was angry with Uddhava too, because he is the missionary there. Emissary there, sorry. And she was so angry. Anyway, what thing is over, they took everything, they're going back in three chariots. First chariot, there's Krishna, Balaram and some of his important people in the first chariot. Second chariot, Shaibya and the maidservants and all of them there. Third chariot, the acharyas and some learned people were there, most of them on foot. And Uddhava is an outrider, he's on the horse. So his job is to oversee things. He'll go very fast to the front, if you want anything, and then he'll go to the middle and the last. He was doing up and down business. While doing this up and down business, of course, Shaibya is in the middle chariot. And he was getting what he called with some interaction was going on with her. Anyway, end of the day, every night, whatever it is, because Uddhava is a very close friend of Krishna, Uddhava will come in into the Krishna's room, place where he stays, and they sleep together. And Krishna will talk to him, and they'll have what happened today, and they'll have some exchanges and go off to sleep. This particular night, what happened was, as soon as they were lying down, but Krishna sent something that the last 2 days, for instance, Uddhava was not speaking to him the way he was speaking, not looking him directly, not meeting him regularly, and then was avoiding his glances and stuff. So he was lying down, and Krishna, of course, as soon as he lies down, and then he's just gone to sleep. And Balaram sit at the outside sleeping, steady breathing, all that is mentioned. But then Uddhava is tossing and tossing and tossing. The man is in love, so he can't sleep. People in love, they only need water and fresh air. Nothing else they need, they say. And all these, symptoms that they feel about all kinds of funny things. They say, modern science is all because of chemical imbalances in the body. That's why you feel like that. Anyway, then Krishna senses that he's not sleeping well. Then he talks to him, hey Uddhava, what's happening to you? Oh, no, nothing. You're not sleeping. No. So this thing goes on. Now the exchange starts between both of them. This is a beautiful exchange. And what happens is, he says, come on, tell me, what is really troubling you? Then he says, I want to go to Badrinath. That was the first bomb. So Krishna says, why? No, I want to renounce life, I don't want to live anymore. I want to go to Badrinath and spend the rest of my life there. So Krishna tells him, we are here to affirm life and go above it, not to deny it. That's not a thing. So it goes on, this banter goes on, and says, oh, it's easy for you, Krishna, you're God, for you everything easy. It's not, you don't understand my position. I'm struggling here. And so then Krishna goes on and finally tells us, what is your real problem? And he says that, I like Shaibya, but I know Shaibya is to be married to Shvetaketu, and he's my senior god brother, and what if I go, should I kill him and take her? I can't do that. Even if she falls for me and Shvetaketu will be hurt, now how can I allow this? I can allow that. So I'm really in trouble. So that is why I'm going away. And then Krishna has a few questions for him, and then Krishna actually asks him, how do you get involved? We came here, we think we battled, we're going back. How did you get involved? So he's saying that in the travel, that Shaibya was so angry and so hurt, she refused to eat. She was so angry, she refused to eat, refused to drink. So he will go and beg her, it seems, at least have a drink, he'll give a glass of milk, please drink. So after a few of these persuasions, just to get rid of Shaibya, she'll grab the glass of milk and quickly drink it and give it back to him and just, get out of the way and like that. And he's describing, when all that happened, you know, the anger in her eyes and, you know, the various descriptions about her. It says all that actually made her even more attractive. So, sometimes some people will try for a girl and the girl doesn't agree, they'll get more interested, more interested. So, that's the nature of the mind. And so he goes on like that, the details. And then he says that, Krishna says that, you know, a woman is fine. This is very important, Krishna's words. He says, when Kamadenu, the Lord of Love, sends the arrows into a man, then the woman becomes fire. The woman is fine. She is happily sitting there making garlands. But because the arrows have shot this man, suddenly the woman becomes fire, he says. So, and then he goes, and then he talks about fire. He uses the word fire all the time. Krishna uses it so beautifully. It's a real masterpiece. He says it's like a wayward fire. When you're walking, you see some fire on the street. And then he says, you know, you just go there, warm yourself and go away. You take the warmth, don't take the flames. And he warns like that. And then he says, but if you stay there too long, and then the fire will crawl under your feet and on top of you and it will burn you completely. And then, you know, Krishna goes on like that. So, he says the way to do it is, you have to make it into a sacrificial fire. That fire, make it into a sacrificial fire. You put it in an altar and worship it. That way, the flame will not burn you, singe you, but the fire will give you warmth forever. And then Krishna explains so many ways. And then he says how he himself does it. He says, I myself, you know, he says, I consider Radharani, Yashoda, Devaki, and he mentioned a whole lot of names, even Kubja, the hunched back woman. I place all of them in the altar and worship them. And that way, you know, that is, I get this warmth forever from them. And then he tells Vyasa, he still is not breaking through, you know. Then he keeps saying that, oh, you Krishna, you don't laugh at me and, you know, don't fool me and all that. But Krishna finally says, is Shaivya ready to be the mother of your all children right now? And then he says, I'm not sure, because she is so angry. So, you don't know yet. Maybe she says that this is not, he says, not a wayward fire, it's not a sacrificial fire. Shaivya is a raging wild fire now. You can't do anything. He says, I gave the same explanation to Shvetaketu and he has accepted. Even Shvetaketu is accepted because Krishna is saving him too. Get out of this place. And now you are having this problem. So, at best, what you do is treat her like a sacrificial fire and wait. And then maybe later, because she has got so much of love for the uncle, she won't give you that love. That love for the uncle is so great, you won't get it. So, later, if it happens, then if she becomes a normal sacrificial fire, then she can become your wife and all that. Then finally, Uddhava says, okay, now what should I do? You know, please tell me, you know. Then Krishna says, tomorrow, Balaram is going to Kushastali. It's a place that is the modern Dwaraka. So he said, you go with him. You go with him. And even if you want to make an altar for Shaivya, he said, you can make an altar better when you're far away from the fire than near the fire, he says. And Uddhava says, okay, I will carry it out. Even at the cost of my life, he will say. And then Krishna tells him that many great things are always done at the cost of one's life. And he ends the story like that. So now in conclusion, I would like to say that though we have this material world and spiritual world and we are trying hard here, we have to understand one thing, that Prabhupada created a spiritual world within this material world for us.
Now this is very important.
In fact, sometimes I think, you know, when they have this Bhakti Shastri and so many Shastris and all that, everybody should read the lifetime of preparation of what Srila Prabhupada's struggles, what he was trying to do, you know, because otherwise you won't understand this, what I'm talking about. He created a spiritual world within this material world for all of us. Now, you all understand that. It's already a perfect place. Now, but what's happening is, a lot of things are brought in, modes of nature, interest, whatever, into. Now, this thing is, because it is like that, you know, everybody wants to bring his own thing here so that, you know, that's the way we are made. So we have to be careful that this is not allowed, especially the third generation. You should even be more strict about certain things, because we are moving, but we are not. For us, this is not a organization. It is not like there is Ramakrishna, there is Chinmayananda, there is Hare Krishna. It's not like that. When we go to a public program, maybe we'll say, yeah, we are Hare Krishna. But for us, this is the only move. This is the movement. This is the only way. Everything else is bogus. We have to be convinced. We are not another movement. Don't become another Hindu movement. We are not another Hindu movement. That's not what Prabhupada wanted. Why did he go to the West? Because he was frustrated with India. You must understand. Because the Vedic culture is being just robbed away, being destroyed. You have to understand this. And we have to preserve this. We don't care. See, when you water down the philosophy, then the strength, everything will go away. Get the philosophy strong. Numbers not important. You will see that Prabhupada all the time, fools, rascals, he's scolding all the time. But none of the Swamijis are scolding fools and rascals now. Does that mean there are no fools and rascals now? If going by numbers, during Prabhupada's time, the Hare Krishna devotee is very small in number. Now, millions and millions of... That means, even by going with simple logic, that time there were fools and rascals, now we have multiplied so many times, that means the fools and rascals also must be multiplied equally, isn't it? Simple logic. I'm not saying that we should scold everybody, but you have to be very careful. Because the philosophy is very important. Like I said, in a public program, we can put butter in their heads. They will say, of course, like Prabhu had went for a religious meeting or something like that. What is it, the backdrop? The backdrop is Bhagavad, of course. Krishna and Arjuna on the chariot. See, we also have Krishna and Arjuna. And then say, you are God, I am God, everybody is God. Is that what Krishna says? Does he tell Arjuna? Now have your confusion gone. Are you ready to act? So, we have to be very careful there. And with that, I'd like to end. Any questions, comments? Very simple. You are initiated. You have to please your spiritual master. Your spiritual master's please, then Krishna's please. That's all. You just have to do what he tells you to do, what he expects of you, and do it properly. That's all. Our system is very simple. You know, it's not that you do one thing, your guru does one thing, and Prabhupada does another. No. The same. Only thing is, even following that is what we tend to go away. We have to keep telling ourselves, no, follow this, follow this. We tend to just go away. Very simple, I can't... You don't know, but who are you? How can anybody know? Who are we? You think Krishna has got time for us? He's got no time for us. Especially a person like me, he won't even look at you. So you try and, most of the time you just struggle. You just struggle. The worst thing is, like at the one time, there was even during Prabhupada's time, there was one group became Gopi Bhav Club, and they all becoming gopis, and they were doing the numbers and all that kind of thing. So, and he was very angry. Prabhupada was very angry. Why are they doing it? And he didn't even have breakfast one day when he heard that they were doing it. So because we can't do all that, When I say be in my temple, I say this temple we were not even fit to be dasya. We're not even fit to be servants. We're not even qualified. So try to improve service. That's all we can do. Forget about Vatsalya, forget and Bahadurya, please. Just forget it. We go and sit in the prasadam hall, and then we want this, we want that, we want a mountain of food, and the gopis, they won't even eat for days for Krishna. So if you can do that, we can't do all that. So don't go to all this. There's real mental trip. There's a mental trip. That's what we shouldn't do, the whole thing. Your guru will tell you, if you don't try to find, that's what I said, you don't go, it's a time immemorial, it says this association. If now the trend is in ISKCON to go to Bhrigus in India, then they will ask, Prabhu, what of my last, your last birth, you were king of Jaipur. And Mataji will go, you were Cleopatra. And they are so happy. If you ask, somebody ask me, I say, it must be a donkey or a monkey, something. I don't know. Why? They get so, why do you get upset? Why not? I tell you, I can speak for myself. I must have been a big monkey, I'm sure. Or even worse than that. This is ridiculous, You can't, you don't, your spiritual master is supposed to give you your true identity. Your swarup, your swarup. Your real identity. He's supposed to reveal to you. Now, I don't know whether you've got the guts, but I have not got the guts to go and ask my spiritual master and ask him, what is my original identity in the spiritual world? I'm coming back, so I don't have to worry about it. So you have to be careful. Don't think that you're practicing something. And the thing is, you must understand the material world is so bad, so cruel, so difficult. By practicing Krishna consciousness itself, you are escaping the clutches of the material world. So you should be happy there. That is enough for you. Oh, I want to be another gopi. And then all those positions are all, this is another thing. Some Mataji said, I will also be a gopi. I'll be the ninth gopi. These are all positions, all taken. You can't become all that. You can be a friend. That's the only thing Krishna will allow. And so there are so many things like that. So we don't have to, just be happy that you should be happy. We can finish your rounds, do the taking prasad and protect another temple and, don't get into trouble. I know I'm still not drinking, I'm still not smoking. You be happy like that. Be happy. I'm not doing all these bad things. That is bonus. Leave it to Krishna and leave it to your spiritual master. You don't worry. Don't crack your head. Then the sadhana also will go. Because Krishna, the biggest challenge is not getting initiated and all that, that jumping around. That is not the thing. To continue for the rest of your life. And, you have to have firm conviction that, this is it, there is nothing else. Nothing else is. This is it. You have to have that firm conviction. People just get excited and they say, I like this, I like that, and then, and then one small problem, they're gone, boosh, gone, don't know where. And then when festival, re-bowl from somewhere, and then, some prasadam and gone, finish. So we don't want, in the West they call fringes, the fringe devotees. Only on festivals you can see them. I shouldn't be talking too much about that, because I myself like that. Anyway, so, anything else? Sorry, I just got carried away with that. గ్రంథాలు శ్రీమద్ భాగవతంకి
శ్రీల ప్రభుపాదికి